Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka 99.9 for Cricket Every Day. My name is Mark Machado from the Murali End, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Vazia-Devon from the Papere. Today we are talking about a very special cricketer. We're talking about Sri Lanka's talismanic. I'm not sure. We'll talk about Chamari Athapattu. You're listening to Sri Lanka 99.94, your new home of Sri Lanka content, and we'll be dropping into your podcast feed on YouTube or the 99.94 app several times every week. So please do rate, review, and subscribe. I know a few of you have rated and reviewed. If you haven't done it already, please do it. And I know some people have messaged me saying that they've reviewed, but they can't see the review. I don't know what's going on there. Obviously, there's a global conspiracy against Sri Lankan cricket content, but I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of it at some point. Estelle Vazia-Devon, how are you doing? How's everything in Colombo going at the moment?
Yeah, all good. Oh, well, as good as it can be.
So next week is the start of the Women's Asian Cup. I was going to say Asian Women's Cup, but that makes no sense. It's quite early here in London still. Sri Lanka, obviously, aren't as good at women's cricket as they are at men's cricket. There's many reasons for this, but the one player who's kind of been holding it all together now for herself for a few years is Chamari Athapattu. And we wanted to do a show talking about her, but really this is, I suppose, a form of tribute to her career, at least thus far, right? Because she's been absolutely excellent. What can you tell us, Estelle, about the early part of her career?
Yeah, she started off in 2009. I think she debuted for Sri Lanka. At that point, I think it was probably the ideal time for a young player to come into the side because Sri Lanka had a lot of experienced heads at that juncture. So Shashikala Sirivardhana, Isha Nilokusurya, they had Rasanjali, Sri Pali Veerakkodi, all of them were in the side at that point. So it was a good time for someone like Athapattu to come in with her kind of aggressive intent. And really, that beginning of her career and the early parts of her career were maybe Sri Lanka's best time in cricket as well. Like, the stats would say that their best win-loss ratio is kind of in that 2009 to 2014 five-year period where Chamari was just starting off. I think one of the biggest innings she played early in her career was she made a half century in a game against England during the 2013 World Cup. That game, I know a lot of people around the world kind of always look back to that tournament in 2013 where Sri Lanka did so well. They beat England and India. But a lot of people, when they think about that time, they think about Isha Nilokusurya because she played some fantastic knocks in that tournament. Got Sri Lanka over the line in both of those games. But something that people overlook is that Athapattu was also kind of a star in that tournament. A 50 against England that kind of carried Sri Lanka in a big game, the first time they've ever beaten England in women's cricket. So her early days were really good where she didn't really have the pressure of kind of the entire team's weight being on her. That's kind of how I think she grew into that aggressive, confident player.
It's interesting, right? Because in preparation for this, I tried to look up the, where she played cricket before she got into the Sri Lanka side. She got into the Sri Lanka side really young, right? She was 19 when she got in. And I know we touched on this when we reviewed the Women's Asia Cup squad a few days ago, but there's not much written about Sri Lanka women's domestic cricket at all, is there? As I said, she came in as a teenager into the senior side, and it looks to me like she basically came in through and this is just kind of piecing it together. I think she came in just through playing for her local cricket team. I think, is she from Kurunagala? And she was playing local cricket, domestic cricket over there, and then got selected. I mean, I can't find. I'm sure in some deep corner of the internet, this exists. But I can't find any stats for her playing domestic cricket before she got into the side, right? And I'm absolutely fascinated about how the Sri Lanka women's side is even picked. How do they even know that these players are coming through beyond hearsay?
Yeah, I think that period of the 2000s, before the 2013 World Cup, I'm sure it'll be really hard to get the numbers together apart from international cricket. Even then, I think some of the earlier games, there are problems with scorecards and such, even on sites like Cricinfo. So it's really tough to get information from before the 2013 World Cup. I think it's a lot better now where you can get the international numbers and the club numbers from Sri Lanka cricket. You can get scorecards and such from the recently concluded tournaments. But yeah, it's tough. And it probably, I think there was a good system in place in terms of scouting at that point. But it's just that to the public, those kind of records and such are not available from those days.
Yeah, and obviously it's a bit of a shame considering, you know, how well kept, you know, if she was 17, 18, 19, and I know, sorry, I'm going over this, but this is going to be one of my big things whenever we talk about women's cricket, is that if she was a boy and she was going to, she would have been at one of the biggest schools with the kind of talent that she has, her records would have been kept immaculately. And, you know, there'd probably be people on, you know, whichever town she's from, talking about those records to this day, because I'm sure she would have made loads of runs. She would have got over 1,000 runs, I imagine, and won various awards. So it's a shame that it's not kept for the women as well, right? Because there's absolutely no doubt that Charmaree is a massive part of Sri Lankan cricket history now. Let's talk about, you know, after 2013, because, you know, as you say, that was a high watermark for the women's game in SL. But it's you know, the recent years and then into COVID haven't been great. In fact, it kind of feels like SLC have really let the women down and it's not developed as well as it should have done in the last few years. However, Charmaree seems to have bucked this trend and seems to be getting stronger, right?
Yeah, she's been doing really well. I think the loss of those 2 years during COVID was a massive blow to her. I spoke to her at that point and she was really disappointed that she wasn't getting much cricket, because you think about it, your early 30s, you don't have a lot of time, especially as a woman, you don't have a lot of time in the game remaining. But at the same time, those are kind of your best years. So she was coming into her best kind of form. So she was really disappointed at that point, not getting many games. I think if you look across the cricketing world on the women's side, teams like Sri Lanka just get the bare minimum matches. So even if you look at FTPs, yeah, they're playing 7 or 8 teams over the next 3 or 4 years. But where other teams are playing maybe a test match and, you know, getting in 5 T20s instead of 3, or maybe 5 ODI series instead of 3, Sri Lanka is getting the bare minimum where they're getting 3 ODIs and 3 T20s. So definitely it's a blow on a player like Athapattu, who has shown that she's capable of doing so much. And I don't think, I mean, it's much worse in women's cricket, but I think we've spoken about, you know, the number of games for the men's team as well, where you've got people like, for example, Joe Root scoring 1,000 runs in a year, but how many test matches is he playing compared to someone like Dimuth Karunaratne? Similarly, Athapattu could get to those big numbers, the highest run scorer of the year, whatever, if she was given those number of games. So it's really disappointing to see that happening. But at the same time, there is also an argument that the team is doing so badly that it's very difficult to kind of convince other teams to also, you know, give us more games. When you go to Australia, give us 5 T20s in that series, give us 5 ODIs. It's tough to kind of argue in that way also, because Sri Lanka hasn't been doing well. But I guess it's all kind of a cycle, right? You've got to give them more games to see them get better. And then once they get better, they'll continue to get more and more games.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we're going to take a short break. But we're going to talk about Sri Lanka's dependency on Charmari, and we're going to talk about what the future may hold for her after this.
You're listening to Cricket's Conversation on 99.94. Whatever your team, we have the show for you on podcast, YouTube, or on the 99.94 app. We have India, England, South Africa, West Indies, and now Sri Lanka covered. If you want to find us, the best way is to follow us on social media at 9994DM by downloading the 9994 app or Google 99.94 on podcast. We speak cricket.
Estelle, I want to talk about. Actually, I'm gonna rephrase that. Sorry, if you could edit that, that'd be great. So, Estelle, I'm a Liverpool fan, as you know, and I obviously experienced a long drought in Liverpool winning league titles, and during that time, they were carried by one player for not the whole 30 years, but for quite a large chunk of it. It was Steven Gerrard, who carried the team and would rescue the team from embarrassing defeats or score a last-minute goal when we really needed it. And, you know, famously got us over the line in Istanbul to win the Champions League in 2005. But this isn't a football podcast. This is a cricket podcast. Why am I talking about Steven Gerrard? Because to me, Charmari is Sri Lanka's Steven Gerrard, right? At times when the team have been staring down the barrel of huge defeats, she has made defeat slightly more palatable for the Sri Lankan cricket public. And at moments, she has had to carry the team over the line and almost single-handedly got wins for the side. There's been some games where it's felt like, you know, she's just rounded up not 10 of her closest friends and defeated particularly Australia almost single-handedly. Well, not quite Australia, but you know what I mean. And you said you've spoken to her. I imagine you're close WhatsApp friends. I don't know. Maybe you're in several groups with her. I don't know. Do we have any idea of how she feels about being such, you know, the most dependable player in the side, and at points having to carry the team?
Unfortunately, we are not good friends. I mean, I've spoken to her a couple of times for interviews, but that's about it. So, I mean, I imagine it's quite a big pressure on her shoulders, knowing that the team depends on her to get runs. That's the only way Sri Lanka are going to get a result in their favor. But she does put on she's a team player, of course. She's captain of the side. So whenever she's questioned about it, she tells you, you know, that she thrives under that pressure. And I guess she does in some ways. You've seen her get runs in the most difficult situations. I think one thing we should also talk about is how good she's been against Australia. You know, Australia has been the most dominant side in the women's game over I don't know how many years now. But Atapattu somehow, you know, her record against Australia is leaps and bounds better than her career record. So she's got hundreds there. She's got a T20 hundred. She's got a couple of ODI hundreds as well. So she seems to, yes, thrive under that pressure, but she usually kind of puts on a brave face and says that she likes to play under that pressure. But I'm sure, I can imagine, it must be pretty hard to know that once you get out, everyone else's heads drop and your chances of winning a game go from like 80% to maybe 20. So I'd imagine it's really hard for her. I don't know whether we will see that change in the next few years. I don't know how much longer she's going to play for Sri Lanka, but it must be hard. I'm sure she misses the time when the likes of Shashikala Srivardhana were in the side, where Sri Lanka had a few more kind of match winners who could contribute and, you know, support her with the bat as well.
I'm gonna dig down deeper into this. When you have met her, you say you're not friends. Do we know what she's into? You know, how she likes to spend her time when she's not playing cricket. Is there any indications of, you know, I don't know, is she into Does she have any other hobbies that we know of?
You are putting me in a spot. I have no idea. I mean, I've only spoken to her on like a professional capacity, but she's pretty chilled out. Like, I mean, I imagine she likes sporty stuff. I think she's like very much of a sports buff. I don't have any clue what she's into outside of the cricketing field.
Estelle, look, me and you are obviously mad cricket fanatics. And, I'd say I'm fanatical about quite a number of sports, actually. And, you know, we've obviously got a lot of respect for Charmery and everything she's done for as a cricketer and for Sri Lankan cricket. How popular is she on the actual island? How well known is she? If she walked into, a restaurant or bar or something in the middle of the island, would people know who she was and would they know what she's achieved? Or is women's cricket still slightly looked down upon, as it were?
I think she's very well known across the island, or that's the kind of impression I've gotten, because it's almost as if that's the only name Sri Lankans know from the Sri Lankan women's side. So when she goes out, she's recognized. I think when the men's team was doing pretty badly, there were lots of comments on social media, why don't you get Charmery Athapattu in to the side? Things like that, of course, in jest. But I think she's very well known, and she's popular because, like I mentioned, she's very chilled out. She'll talk to whoever she meets. She's always up for taking a couple of pictures with fans and things like that. So she's very popular. I think there was one experience I had covering a game against Pakistan in Dabul. We weren't in the press box. It was just me and my photographer friend who were covering that game at that point. And we were at ground level, right? And there were a few people in the stands who had come to watch that game. And one guy, I think probably for the last 10 overs of the match, he was just screaming, "Charmery, I love you," throughout. And I mean, the girls on the ground were very amused by it. But like, that's the kind of, she has that kind of support. When you compare her with some of the other players, when people come to watch games, they're always out for a photograph with Charmery. They're always kind of calling out her name and stuff like that. So she's got that fan following because, I mean, cricket is such a popular game in Sri Lanka, right? And when you, thankfully, we see a lot more women's cricket on TV nowadays. So that, I think that has really helped in her popularity and the fact, and to have people know, like recognize her.
Yeah, that's great to hear, because she obviously deserves all the plaudits and all the love that people can shower on her. And, you know, I still see, sadly, a lot of, you know, misogyny and sexism targeted at women cricketers. And that's not just Sri Lankan women cricketers. I mainly see that to English cricketers or Indian women's cricketers at the moment. And, you know, it's obviously totally unacceptable. And also, it sounds like to me, Estelle, that, you know, there seems to be a growing market and appetite for women's cricket in Sri Lanka, which is obviously brilliant, because I think, you know, everyone, regardless of their gender, should be allowed to flourish in the sport, and also, you know, flourish in something that's so important to Sri Lankan life and Sri Lankan culture as well. So it's all great to hear that. We're going to take another quick break. But we're going to be back talking about what the future might hold for Charmery, and also her exploits playing franchise cricket as well.
If you love the language of cricket and want more, then head over to the 99.94 app and you can hear all of our podcasts and cricket commentary. We're adding new shows all the time and covering cricket series from all over the world. Be the first to hear all of our announcements by following us on social media at 99.94 DM. Welcome to Cricket's Conversation.
So Estelle Chamery has played in a number of franchise tournaments around the world now. She's played in the Women's Big Bash a couple of times. She's been a Melbourne Renegade and she played for the Perth Scorchers, I think. She also played in the inaugural Women's CPL, which was actually only a few weeks ago. And I remember when the 100 draft was coming up, there was a lot of talk about whether or not she'd be picked up on one of the 100 sides. Sadly, she wasn't. We know that I think sooner rather than later, the women's IPL is going to start up, and she's played in the Fairbreak tournament as well. She could potentially earn quite a lot of money in the next few years, playing a lot of franchise cricket around the world, right, as these tournaments start up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's maybe, I might be wrong on this, but she's the only fully professional women's cricketer in Sri Lanka at the moment. Most of the others are employed by, say, the armed forces, but Atapattu plays for the Chilau Marians and she has bad sponsors and all of that, which is quite rare in Sri Lanka. So her exploits in the franchise side of things, I don't think she's been able to kind of shine to her potential. But that all comes down to, you know, how often you get to play as well. She hasn't really gotten... you did say she's played in so many leagues, but the games she gets and also position she plays in hasn't really afforded her much opportunity. But I'm hoping, like you said, the 100 and definitely the IPL that she will get in and she'll be able to kind of showcase her talent. She was pretty decent in the kind of exhibition IPL tournaments that they've had over the last couple of years, was good in the Fairbreak competition as well. WBBL hasn't been able to make a big mark, but I will say I think Perth Scorchers had never won a championship until she was in the side. So obviously, she's got something to go in their favor as a result of being in their team.
Yeah, in fact, I was lucky enough to spend a bit of time with the captain of the Brazilian women's side, Roberta Moretti Avery, a few months ago, and I was talking to her about what it was like to play in the Fairbreak competition, and the one player she talked about without me prompting her as well was Chamery, and said, "Oh my gosh, I can't remember if they were in the same team or not." But she was like, she was really inspiring because she was an absolute professional player, a total professional, really willing to help the kind of younger players out, or the less experienced players out. And then she went, she had a great, you know, last time right out, she had a great tournament in the UAE and was brilliant with all the other players and stuff like that. And obviously at 32... we've got to start asking how many more seasons, how many more years of playing top level cricket does she have in her? And, you know, how much longer are we going to see her playing for Sri Lanka as well? Because it's you know, for all international cricketers, it can be a lot more difficult than I think some of us fans realise, because you're going all around the world the whole time, you're training the whole time. There's not much. I think as a sport, I think cricket is potentially a lot more mentally draining than other sports are, because, you know, it's an individual sport basically masquerading as a team sport. And, you know, you think of all these things, you're like, how much longer can she stay playing international cricket? And as these franchise leagues grow, are they a threat to her calling it a day for the national side sooner rather than later, because she could potentially earn a lot more money playing in the women's IPL, playing the 100, than she could do captain Sri Lanka, right?
Yeah, I think obviously the money is important, but I also feel like, you know, it probably would take a load off her to be in a side that can support her, which we don't see with the Sri Lankan side, unfortunately, that kind of skill level isn't up to her mark. So I think mentally also, maybe playing franchise cricket really helps her in that way, where she knows that everything doesn't depend on her. I think fitness-wise, she's pretty fit. She's a good fielder, a great off her own bowling. So on that side of things, I think she has at least maybe 3 to 4 years in her to kind of maximize those last few years of her career. She'd be happy that the ICC finally released FTP for the women's side of things. So she knows what's coming in the next couple of years. But yeah, I think definitely the franchise leagues are going to be a big temptation. I'm sure she can balance playing for Sri Lanka and the franchises because Sri Lanka don't play a lot. Like I mentioned to you, yeah, they have the same number of series as the other teams, but they do play the bare minimum where they've got 3 ODIs and 3 T20s. So shouldn't be that hard, I think, for her to kind of balance franchise cricket, whether she wants to, or like I said, whether like that's something that she wants to keep doing is, I don't know. But I do get the feeling that, like you mentioned about what Roberta said, she's very keen on getting the youngsters going. I think we've seen that in the Sri Lankan side as well. A lot of young players coming through with her as captain. She's always very encouraging. She tries to help them as much as possible. I know she mentioned a couple of years ago going to the women's IPL, the exhibition tournament, and having someone like Jemima Rodrigues constantly asking her questions and trying to like pick her brain. And what I could understand was that Chamari was happy to do it. It didn't matter that Rodrigues was from a different side. So that kind of, you know, nurturing youngsters, kind of mentoring youngsters, I think she's quite keen on that. So that could be the reason that she does hold on, if she does hold on beyond the next 2 to 3 years. But as a Sri Lankan cricket fan, I would love to see a time where she's relieved of the captaincy duties and she's just allowed to be the player that she can be, because I'm sure that if that pressure is released, not just captaincy, I mean, if Sri Lanka managed to produce or develop a couple of players who are match winners on in their own right, then she can do so much more than what we've seen. And we've already seen her achieving so much. I think she can do so much more if that kind of falls into place for her in the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we've talked about how potentially there's some exciting youngsters coming through as well into the women's team. So hopefully, touch wood, if things go well, and you know, if the players get the right support that they need from SLC, then maybe we can see Sri Lanka slide up the rankings as a women's side again once more and become a bit more of a force, because I think that's what everybody wants. Has she indicated what she might do once she retires from playing? Do you think she might go into coaching? Because, you know, we've talked about her being, you know, mentoring youngsters and how into the game she is. And, you know, she is Sri Lanka's first women's superstar player. She, you know, maybe she does have a role to play if she wanted it, to develop future talent at the point when it's time for her to hang up her boots.
I don't think anyone's had the courage to ask her that, because we just don't want to let go of her. So, but I think from what I've seen, she does seem to have, she works well with the younger players. So I think she could have a role in that line of work as well, when she does eventually, hopefully not in the next few years, when she does eventually call it a day.
Yeah, and the other thing I will say is, from what I'm seeing around SLC, and, you know, I've been lucky enough to go down and chat to some of the people in the development squad this when it came to England and the under-19s team, is there definitely seems to be a culture of trying to bring players who've achieved quite a bit in the game as seniors, as full internationals, back into the setup to develop the youngsters as well, right? So presumably, well, we never know with Sri Lankan cricket what the strategy might be when Chamari does finally retire in 12 to 15 years' time. So, you know, let's not make predictions too far ahead, but it does at the moment at least seem to be part of the strategy. thanks for listening to Sri Lanka 99.9 for Cricket Every Day. Please do rate, review and subscribe. Also, download the 99.94 app and follow us. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Machado, and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazu Day 1, as in the number one. We put links up for everything we do over there on this podcast and beyond. Also, follow our network. This is quite important, at 99.9 for DM on social media. It's on Twitter, it's on Instagram, and it's on Facebook as well, if you still use Facebook. Follow for podcasts and commentary from the bat and ball world. Thanks for joining Cricket Conversation on 99.94. We speak cricket.